David Howard was a missionary with Latin American Mission in Costa Rica and Colombia for 15 years, from 1953 to 1968. He also directed the Urbana Conventions in 1973 and 1976. Here's David Howard talking with Gordon Govier of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship.
The Urbana Convention played a major role in the life of at least one of the missionaries that we're talking about, Jim Elliott. Tell us about that background, the Urbana background that he had when he went on the mission field.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I'd use the word major influence. It did have a strong influence, but Jim was a strong, convinced missionary candidate before Urbana, but Urbana strengthened him, no doubt about that. He and I went together to Toronto to the first Urbana Convention, which was held in 1946 at the University of Toronto. And this did have a good impact on him. I would be careful not to say that that was sort of like the beginning of his missionary call, because he was a committed missionary candidate before that. But it certainly strengthened it and built him up, and he followed through from that. And then he went again, and I went with him to the second Urbana, which was really the first at Urbana at the University of Illinois in 1948. He was there, and he actually put on a special dramatic program as sort of like one of the workshops at Urbana 48, something that he himself had prepared and had used at Wheaton College. He was president then of the Student Foreign Missions Fellowship on the Wheaton College campus, and had put together that fall a very impressive program, which gave us a very strong missionary call, and that was used at Urbana 48. Not in the plenary session, but in what would be comparable, I guess, to a workshop, and it was held in one of the auditoriums on the campus.
Do you remember what the drama was about?
Well, I was trying to think. It was it kind of gave an idea of what's going on in the world in general, and some statistics that he'd gotten a hold of unreached areas and that kind of thing, and then a very strong appeal to students and young people to be considering what God wanted them to do.
So even then, unreached peoples was a major theme.
Well, no, that phrase was not used in
okay.
those days.
But it was the idea that there were still people that needed to be reached.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, that phrase, unreached peoples, didn't really come into vogue until about the time, the first time that was really used to a great extent, in my knowledge, is at the Lausanne Congress in 1974, when Ralph Winter began and Donald McGavern began using that and speaking about that. But the concept was the same, though. There was strong emphasis with statistics and so on about how many people in the world had ever really heard the gospel and how many needed to hear it. So that concept, yes, was very much there.
Do you remember the major speakers or a particular speaker that made an impact on you at the first conference in Toronto and then in 1948 when it moved to Urbana?
Yes. Some of the major speakers. One was Mr. L.E. Maxwell, the principal of Prairie Bible Institute in Canada. He spoke on the work of the Holy Spirit in missions. Dr. Robert McQuilkin, who was president at that time of Columbia Bible College. He was the founder and president of Columbia Bible College, now known as Columbia International University. He gave the closing address in which he emphasized the second coming of Christ and how that relates to the missionary outreach of the church. I think to me one of the greatest impacts was the music that we got there. We learned new hymns. The InterVarsity hymnal had not yet been published, but they were bringing, InterVarsity was bringing some new hymns, new to us in the States. They were old hymns from England and from Europe, great old hymns of the faith, which we had not really heard or known in the United States. There was a small hymn book put together just for that convention. That is, a number of the hymns were put into the little program that we got, and we began singing them. And then later, of course, the InterVarsity hymnal was developed. The first one came out in the late 40s, 47, 48 maybe. That was revised by Paul Beckwith and republished in 1950. That had a great impact on it because there were some good missionary hymns in that old hymn book, and that had a great impact on us.
Music played a major role from the start.
Yeah, I think it did. I think the hymns and the Bible studies, we, just like every Urbana, we had in those days the personal small group Bible studies in the early morning, and then went to the plenary sessions, and then we had opportunity in the afternoon to interact and talk to missionaries and their displays and all that. So, but I think those hymns had a great impact on us. It was interesting to me.
Were you on the mission field in 1956 then when the word came out about what had happened in Ecuador?
Yes. I was a missionary at that time in Costa Rica with the Latin America Mission. I had gone to the field with my wife in 1953. In fact, Jim Elliott and his wife, my sister Elizabeth, came to Costa Rica on their honeymoon. They got married in Ecuador and came and spent part of their honeymoon with us, my wife Phyllis and me, in Costa Rica. So the last time I saw Jim Elliott was on his honeymoon at our home in Costa Rica. See, he had been my best friend in college. He was best man in my wedding, and we lived together in the dorm at Wheaton College. We were members of the wrestling team together and did a lot of things together. So, but when they died in 1956, I went immediately to Ecuador to be with my sister Elizabeth, and went with her back to their home, their mission station in Shandia, that Jim had developed, a home that he'd built and so on. I stayed there for a couple of weeks with Elizabeth to try to help her get resettled.
How did you hear the news?
Well, it's interesting. I was my wife and I were having a little vacation on the coast of Costa Rica, down at a place called Punta Arenas on the Pacific coast, and I received a phone call from Kenneth Strachan, who was the general director of the Latin America Mission, with which we were members, and they had just gotten this news. They didn't even have any details. So he didn't tell me the details because he didn't really have them. He just said, there's been some trouble down in Ecuador. We don't know the details, but he said, I think you better come up here to San Jose till we find out what's been happening down there. So I left my wife and two small children at this vacation house that the mission had on the beach in Punta Arenas, and I went up to San Jose, Costa Rica, while we waited for word that came in from Ecuador, and the word was coming in by that time through ham operators and so on, and began to come into focus what actually had happened. And then I made arrangements immediately to go to Ecuador to be with my sister.
And you were then a speaker at Urbana 57, home on furlough from the mission field. What kind of a message did you bring to Urbana, and what kind of an impact did this incident have on that particular Urbana convention?
Well, I'm sorry to tell you, I really can't remember what I spoke on there. The death of those five men was certainly very prominent there. People by that time, of course, they were hearing about it and knowing about it, and it was beginning to impact students of that era, recognizing the tremendous commitment of these men. Although that didn't really come out as strongly yet as it did later, because we didn't have the stories in writing as yet. The book that my sister Elizabeth wrote, Through Gates of Splendor, that tells that story, was not out yet. And then the next book called The Shadow of the Almighty, which is the biography of Jim Elliott, that was not out. And those things really began to have an impact, because in the reading of those stories and Jim Elliott's journals and the kind of things he was saying and writing, that began to have a tremendous influence. It became better known a little later.
So it wasn't necessarily Urbana 57, but maybe later Urbanas where it had a stronger impact?
I think so, yes. Mm-hmm. Because later on, one or another of those books was used as a book of the day at Urbana, which was encouraging the students. In those days, there usually was just one book of the day each day. There'd be one book that the convention was urging the students to buy. Later on, they put a whole packet together of books, and they'll urge them to buy this packet of books, which will all have a missionary impact. But if I'm not mistaken, I think both Through Gates of Splendor and Shadow of the Almighty were books of the day at one time or another at Urbana.
over the years, the memory has faded, and now we're at the 50th anniversary, and your schedule is busy again with events that mark that event 50 years ago.
Yes.
It appears as if it may have a new impact in calling forth a new generation of missionaries.
I think so, yes. You mentioned my schedule. Yes, I'm this coming Sunday, the January 8th, which is the exact 50th anniversary. The men died on January 8th, 1956. I will be speaking at a fairly large church in San Diego, Skyline Church. They asked me specifically to be there for a commemoration service and tell about these men. That night, I have to fly back to Chicago because the next morning, Monday, January 9th, Wheaton College will have a special chapel service, a commemoration of the 50th anniversary. Three of those five men that died were Wheaton men. Jim Elliott and Ed McCulley were class of 49. Nate Saint, the pilot who died, didn't actually graduate from Wheaton, but he was there, a student, when we were there. I mean, I knew those men quite well. As I mentioned earlier, Jim was my best friend, and Ed McCulley was a very close friend. He also served in my wedding as a groomsman. And Nate Saint, I knew Nate, but not quite as closely as I knew the other men. But Wheaton College will be commemorating that this next Monday.
You were the director of how many Urbanas?
I directed two. 73 and 76. Actually, I was assistant director of Urbana 51 way back. After I graduated from college in 1949 at Wheaton, I was on InterVarsity staff full-time for 1 year, 1950. Then I got married, and I went back to graduate school at Wheaton working on master's, and I worked part-time with InterVarsity. And 1951, Urbana, I served as associate director to the main director. The director was Wesley Gustafson was his name, and I was his assistant. And then in 1970, I came back from the mission field. I'd been on the mission field from 1953 to 68, when Dr. John Alexander, the president of InterVarsity, he got after me very persistently to come back to the States and be missions director. I turned him down three times, literally, and he kept after me. And the fourth time around, when he came back again, the Lord, in a rather traumatic way, made it clear that this is what he wanted me to do. So in 1969, I came back to the States, and I became assistant director of Urbana under Paul Little. Paul Little was already in the slot of directing Urbana 70. So I came along and served as his assistant. And then I took over 73 and 76. Paul Little became my assistant in 73. He was teaching at Trinity also at the time. But I was responsible for those two conventions.
And Urbana has had an impact. As we started out talking about the impact on your life and Jim Elliott at the very beginning, you mentioned that at Urbana 76, it had another impact on your niece and Jim's daughter, which has finally come to fruition just recently.
Yes, my niece, Valerie, she was Valerie Elliott, the daughter of Jim Elliott, and my sister Elizabeth, is married to a fine man named Walter Shepherd. They are now missionaries. They've just gone this past year to Africa, to Congo, as missionaries. And in a recent prayer letter, which she just sent out within this past month, she indicates that at Urbana 76, which happened to be one of those that I directed, she and her husband felt called of God into missions. But God led them elsewhere for a rather lengthy period of time, for 29 years in pastoral ministry, before the way finally opened for them to go to the mission field. So now they're on the field. They're in Africa, but it's been 29 years since their real sense of calling from God at Urbana 76.
So
I might go back farther, just to go back one more step to Toronto. I still have the World Evangelism Decision Card that I signed in 1946 at Toronto. It's one of those cards InterVarsity always uses, a decision card where you can make a commitment, committing yourself to God's will for missions. And I signed that card in 1946, indicating I believe God was leading me into the mission field. I still have that card, and God did lead me, so that for more than 50 years I've been involved in missions.
Well, it's just one story, and thankfully there are hundreds of thousands of lives.
Hundreds more. In fact, at this stage of my life, one of the interesting things to me is that I've traveled extensively around the world in recent years. Now, in the last 15 to 20 years or more, I've done extensive worldwide travel. And almost everywhere I go, I couldn't say everywhere, but I would say the majority of the places that I've been in the world, and I've been in probably 80 countries, I almost invariably will run into people who will tell me that they're serving today on the mission field, sometimes national leaders, national pastors and Christian workers, and then many times expat missionaries will tell me that it was Urbana that God used to call them into the field. Many times they'll tell me that because they'll say, well, it was one of those Urbanas you directed. I was there at Urbana 73 or I was there at Urbana 76. Just want you to know that God used that. I had an interesting experience just a year ago. The Evangelical Theological Society in the United States meets annually. My son, David Jr., is a professor of Old Testament, and he's a dean at Bethel Theological Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. He was president last year of the Evangelical Theological Society, and I went to that convention just to watch him in action as president, and I was amazed at how many theologians and professors of theology and others who are members of that society came to me to tell me that and to thank me that Urbana 73 or 76 was a major factor in leading them into God's service, not to the mission field, many of them, but serving God as professors of biblical studies and theology and so on.
David Howard talking with Gordon Govier of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship.